As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide supports financial professionals with client-friendly resources and innovative solutions to help create greater retirement security for their clients. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Welcome to the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. I'm Tom Keene. Daily, we bring you insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. Find Bloomberg Surveillance on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Bloomberg.com, and of course, on the Bloomberg.
St. Louis Fed President James Bullard is in Jackson Hole, Wyoming for the Kansas City Fed's annual symposium. He's sitting down with Bloomberg's Michael McKee, and he's facing a really complicated situation at a time when China is now going to issue retaliatory tariffs. Let's head over to Mike McKee.
We would like to welcome all of our viewers and listeners on Bloomberg Television and Radio Worldwide to Jackson Hole, where the Kansas City Fed is holding its annual symposium. Yesterday, the Hawks were in control. Random selection of who got interviewed, but we're bringing in a dove now, Jim Bullard. He was one of the first to call for rate cuts, and you're still calling for rate cuts, although you want 25 basis points. You're not ready to do 50 this next time?
I think there'll be a robust debate about 50, so I think it's creeping onto the table here, but obviously the markets have it as a base case of 25 basis points.
Jay Powell characterized the rate cut on July 31st as a mid-course correction, but the markets are basically pricing it as the start of a rate cut cycle. How do you see it? How much accommodation does the economy need?
I like to think about the mid-90s examples, the 95 example and the 98 example. And I know some of your viewers weren't around paying attention to financial markets at that time. But if you look at that, the Fed adjusted, was worried about, let's say, the Asian currency crisis, very similar to today, lowered the policy rate by about 75 basis points. The U.S. economy actually powered through that whole episode. And then the committee took those insurance cuts away later. I think that's a great baseline idea about what we're looking at now with a global trade war, global manufacturing and contraction, and possible spillovers to the U.S. You want to insure the economy against that and stay out of trouble.
So you think maybe 75 basis points is where you would see us stopping at this point?
I'm saying that's what they did in the 90s. I don't know where we'll end up, but you know, I do think that you've got this yield curve that's massively inverted here, and you got the funds rate as the very highest point on the whole yield curve. That doesn't make a lot of sense. So we have to react to the fact that there's been a downdraft in global yields.
What is it that you're insuring against? There doesn't seem to be a demand problem in the U.S. There doesn't seem to be a cost of credit problem in
the
U.S.
No, this is a global slowdown, and there's a trade war going on. I don't think there's resolution likely anytime soon. And this trade war is triggering other actions around the world, other countries thinking about reevaluating their own trade relationships. So this could easily get out of control and easily feed back to the U.S. That's not my base case, but it is something that could happen I think we should protect against.
But how does monetary policy do that?
Well, lower rates will stimulate our economy somewhat compared to what they would be otherwise, and that would help us power through the waters, the churning waters here of the trade war.
A lot of people say lower rates won't help because the problem that we're having is companies cutting back because of trade war uncertainty, not because they think that the economy is going
to be
recession.
Yeah, but it's a big economy. There are lots of other aspects to the economy, interest-sensitive sectors that are going to, it's going to matter for them.
How much additional growth do you think you can provide to the economy?
Well, that's a great question, and there's a long literature. Much of it's been presented here at Jackson Hole over the years about the, you know, what the real effects of monetary policy are and how much the economy reacts. But if you think about the 90s Asian currency crisis example, we actually argued in St. Louis during that period that because rates were lower because of the flight to safety, that that helped the economy get through that episode with kind of unscathed. And so, you know, maybe we can get an outcome like that this time around.
Well, how much of it is the fact, the idea that somebody will see lower interest rates and go buy a car, and how much of it is just reassuring people that somebody's watching out for the economy?
Well, we do want to continue the expansion, and we're certainly willing to take all actions that we need to continue the expansion as best we can.
How much do you worry about the way Wall Street sees it? The idea that they think there's a recession imminent and they're looking at four additional rate cuts. Do you think they're reading the economy and the outlook wrong?
Well, if you look at the yield curve, it's been a good predictor of slowdowns and recessions. And so if you have a recession prediction model, it's going to use the yield curve to try to predict that. So our job is to get the yield curve to be uninverted so that those recession probability models don't work anymore. That would be a great thing to do. I'm not interested in testing somebody's theory about this time is different about the yield curve.
Well, do you think that with the haven trade these days, you might not be able to get long rates up because so much money's coming into the U.S. because rates are negative elsewhere?
Right. But there's a silver lining to that because that's driving longer-term yields lower, and that should be helpful to the U.S. economy. That's what happened during the Asian currency crisis.
What are CEOs in your district telling you about what's happening, what they see happening?
Depends who you talk to. I would say in manufacturing, they're very much scrambling to reorient supply chains, think about new strategies that will work even in a more uncertain world. If you look at agriculture, that's very much a down industry, I would say, for now. They're very much affected by the trade war. So, but on the other hand, consumer goods or something more closely tied to U.S. consumer, they're doing pretty well. Walmart reported out of our district last week that, you know, very strong sales. So I think there are good things going on the consumer side and the household side, which makes perfect sense. You've got, you know, a great labor market, unemployment near 50-year lows, a lot of good things going on in that dimension.
Well, business has been holding back on spending. Do CEOs tell you that they think there will be demand out there, there will be a reason to invest if they get past the uncertainty, if trade wars go away?
I think they'd be willing to invest, but they're kind of wondering, oh, wait a minute, no, how should I do this given the uncertainty that's out there?
Do you worry that the Fed is the only game in town and that people are putting too much responsibility for keeping the economy afloat on you?
I do think all eyes have turned to central banking, but that's over the last decade. And I think I hope people are coming to the realization that you need other types of policies to help you. There are many, many policies pursued by federal and state governments, and it's the sum total of all those that help your economy.
Would you think that the economic situation in the U.S. now calls for a significant fiscal response?
You know, we just got a budget deal through, and it, you know, it is more spending. So I'd like to see an analysis of that on the economy before I go to another spending bill on top of that.
Inflation.
It was bipartisan,
yeah.
Too. I think, you know, people say, well, there's never bipartisanship, but actually you got that through. So I thought that was pretty good. Yeah.
The minutes showed that there was division on the committee in terms of inflation, and some people thinking that cutting rates is... one of the reasons for cutting rates is that inflation expectations have slipped and they're too low. I presume you're in that camp.
No, I'm very concerned, excuse me, about the five-year TIPS break even, which is, I'm not sure where it's trading today, but it's been trading very low. And if you subtract off 30 basis points to translate between CPI inflation and PCE inflation, it says that markets are only expecting about 1% or maybe 1.1% inflation over the next 5 years. And we're supposed to hit 2% inflation. So I think we can afford to be kind of dovish here, get those inflation expectations up, and hopefully hit our inflation target over the next 5 years.
Well, again, a question about what you can accomplish. Do you think you actually can move inflation expectations, given that you had rates at zero for 7 years and inflation couldn't hit 2%?
Well, we have to try while we can and while we've got while we're in the position to do so. I definitely think inflation expectations will move up if we play our cards right here.
How long do you think we need to be in a rate cutting cycle? As long as the trade wars are on?
You know, I think the trade wars have been priced into markets in a way that they weren't earlier. I think as of May or April-May timeframe this year, markets were kind of putting, you know, I'm making up numbers, but like 90% probability on the idea that there would be a deal with China. It was just around the corner, just 2 weeks away, something like that. Now, I think it's shifted the other way, where Wall Street is putting 90% probability on no deal anytime soon. The notion that maybe the Chinese will just wait for the election and see if they can get a new president to negotiate with. So I think all of that's now been priced in, and so there's probably no more kind of downside to that, at least.
All right, Jim Bullard, St. Louis Fed President, thank you for joining us on Bloomberg Television and Radio Worldwide.
All right, thanks a lot, Mike.
We'll send it back to you in New York.
That was Bloomberg's Michael McKee speaking with St. Louis Fed President James Bullard.
We're going to be hearing right now from Dallas Fed President Robert Kaplan. He is in Jackson Hole at the Kansas City Fed's annual symposium, sitting down with Bloomberg's very own Michael McKee. Mike.
Thank you very much, and welcome to all of our viewers and listeners on Bloomberg Television and Radio Worldwide. We are with Robert Kaplan, the Dallas Fed President. Thanks for joining us again here on Bloomberg. A lot of people yesterday took the comments of the Fed presidents who were interviewed as a sort of a hawkish rebellion, but there are doves out there as well. And since you got here, you've been basically telling people you're sympathetic to the rate cut cause.
Yeah, and you know, the disagreement within the Fed, I think, is much more about how to manage the risks. And the way I see the U.S. economy is, the U.S. consumer is strong, and as long as the U.S. consumer stays strong, we're not going to have a downturn or severe downturn. We're going to have solid growth. The issue is manufacturing is weak, global growth is decelerating, and if those intensify, that's going to seep into the rest of the economy. The consumer will be the last thing to go. And what I'm concerned about is if those negatives intensify, you could have a negative jobs report in the next X number of months. And then you're going to see weakness in the consumer. And if we wait to see that, I think we've waited too long. So I'm very open-minded and constructive that we may need to make a policy adjustment here in the next X number of months. But I'm keeping an open mind, and I haven't made a decision yet, and I'll decide before the September meeting.
How big a policy adjustment in the long run do you think we need? There was Jay Powell at his July 31st press conference saying mid-course correction, and yet Wall Street pricing in right now beginning of a rate cut cycle.
Yeah, so I've been very open about saying unless I see meaningful further weakness, I view the adjustments needed as tactical. They should be limited, restrained, modest. And I don't see this as the beginning of a rate-cutting cycle. But we may need to make some adjustment. And for me, the reality check on that is when I look at the Fed funds rate, I don't worry as much about the debate between ones and tens, twos and tens, and how that's moving. I look at the Fed funds rate versus the entire Treasury curve. And the whole Treasury curve has moved down in the last 3 or 4 months. The Fed funds rate is now above every rate along the Treasury curve, including the 30-year. That, for me, is a reality check that says maybe policy is tighter than I might have thought 3 or 4 months ago, and we may need to make an adjustment. And I think that's a good second check for me, which I am cognizant of.
So the December rate increase might have been a mistake?
My own view is, if you asked me on April 30th, what my forecast was for the economy, I would have said 2.5% growth. And if I was wrong, the risks were to the upside. So in April, I would have said I had my concerns, but no, I think policy setting is about right. We then had the China issue. We then had the threat against Mexico, which might have been more significant to a number of businesses I talked to. We've had recent intensification. And now in light of these events, since May 1st, now I think there's an increasing argument that maybe the policy setting needs to be adjusted. But it's as a result of other policies away from monetary policy. Well,
why was the Mexico threat worse than the China threat?
So it's interesting. The China threat clearly affected businesses here. If you had a market, if you sold to China, like agricultural, or if you had logistics and supply chains, that Mexico is central to so many companies in this country in terms of logistics and supply chains. When that threat occurred, even though we had a trade agreement, not ratified, but a trade agreement, that really, for the businesses I talked to, even though it didn't actually happen, it was so significant to their business that after that, most of them I talked to tell me they've now internalized that trade uncertainty is sort of a fact of life now. I think before that threat, they had thought if we can resolve some of these agreements, maybe we'll settle down. I think the Mexico threat helped business internalize. I think trade uncertainty is going to be with us. And what I saw businesses do is become more cautious in terms of CapEx expansion plans. And I think that caution is still here today.
Well, that's not a cost of credit issue, nor is it a demand issue. So
No. Tell
me how monetary policy, you guys making a rate cut, is going to help any of this.
Yeah. So to that point, if I talk to businesses today, every one of them says to me, probably without exception, listen, availability and cost of capital is not my problem. You know, monetary policy, you guys are not my problem. My problem is trade uncertainty and other issues related to that that are having challenging impacts on my business. Here's the issue. If you look out over the horizon, and the job of a central banker is not to look what the situation is today, is to look at what it's going to be over the next X number of months. If the policy setting is too tight, then eventually you're going to see credit tighten. You'll see that ultimately, I believe, tighten financial conditions, which will impact the economy. I think my job is to look ahead and balance these risks and to try to make risk management decisions so that the policy setting is more appropriate, because I know if it's too tight, it may seem innocuous for a number of months, but eventually I think that will lead, my own view is that will lead to a tightening of financial conditions down the road, even though we don't see it today.
But are you a hammer in search of a nail here, in the sense that people expect a Fed rate cut to solve the economy's problems?
No.
It's not going to do that?
So quite the contrary, and you've probably heard me say, I've been very vocal in saying the fulcrum or the center of gravity in U.S. economic policy today is not monetary policy. It's trade uncertainty. It's probably immigration policy to some extent. It's policies that relate to improved skill training, infrastructure spending, but particularly in the short run, trade policy and immigration policy, policies that could help us grow the workforce. That's the center of gravity in U.S. economic policy. It's not that monetary policy doesn't have a key role to play, but it's not the fulcrum of economic policy, and I regularly call that out, because I don't believe monetary policy is causing, if we have a slowdown, I don't think it's causing this slowdown. And if we have a severe slowdown, I don't think monetary policy is going to be enough to arrest it either. But it still has a key role to play. And so we've got to make good decisions about it to play that key role.
You probably know more about Wall Street than anybody else on the Fed, given your background at Goldman Sachs. Do you worry that by cutting rates, you're going to just encourage financial, shall we say, misallocations?
So you always worry, and this is one of the reasons why I've said, even though I'm open to an adjustment either in September or over the next few meetings, I'd prefer not to have to make any adjustment, because if you lower the Fed funds rate, it reduces the rate for savers. It encourages risk taking. Now, I would also acknowledge, if you look along the whole Treasury curve, to some extent, that horse has already left the barn. I mean, for investors, your fixed income alternatives have already declined substantially. The only rate that hasn't declined with it is the Fed funds rate. So I think, to some extent, the incentive to increase debt or leverage, which I've called out, that's already there because the Treasury curve is where most businesses borrow. A number of them borrow on floating rate basis, but a lot of them to fund share repurchase or mergers use the Treasury curve. So I'm balancing that, and I'm concerned about it. But I think most importantly, foremost in my mind right now is, can we take steps that will help moderate this slowing we're seeing, or help with the global slowing, which might transmit to the United States, and manufacturing weakness that appears or could seep into the rest of the economy. Those are the issues I'm trying to balance.
But can't you be seen as, if you're trying to bring Fed funds down to the Treasury curve, being led around by Wall Street?
Not trying to bring it down to the Treasury curve, but I think the Treasury curve being lower is a signal that maybe monetary policy is too tight. So, no, we're not going to be led around by Wall Street. I think the curve is far more driven, not by monetary policy again, but if I watch the curve extremely carefully. I've been watching markets carefully for my whole adult life. The big moves in the Treasury curve haven't been, to my eye, haven't been in response to monetary policy action or rhetoric. They've been in response to trade uncertainty and other economic policies away from monetary policy.
Last question. Do you think we can talk ourselves into recession?
Well, yes. Psychology is a critical part of the economy. And I noticed that the August consumer sentiment numbers were a little bit weaker. And I think if you have continued uncertainty, if you have intensification of trade uncertainty or trade, and not just with China, I mean more broadly with other countries globally, vis-a-vis the United States, consumers pay attention to that. And this chain of events I mentioned earlier about weakness in manufacturing seeping to other parts of the economy, eventually affecting the jobs market, consumers are watching that chain of events too and are very cognizant of it in their own industry. And so sure, yeah, the psychology can turn negative and affect the economy. And we have to be cognizant of that.
Robert Kaplan, Dallas Fed, thank you very much for joining us this morning. We'll send it back to you in New York.
That was Bloomberg's Michael McKee speaking with Dallas Fed President Robert Kaplan.
Inflation, market volatility, economic insecurity. Who isn't looking for greater retirement security these days? As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide helps millions of people invest in their financial futures. With client-friendly resources and innovative solutions, Nationwide supports financial professionals so they can help clients feel more confident in their retirement years. Nationwide is on your side. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio. We're going to be hearing from Cleveland Fed President Loretta Mester in just a few moments. She's in Jackson Hole, Wyoming for the Kansas City Fed's annual symposium. She's sitting down with Michael McKee. A lot of questions about what the Fed can do to counter the uncertainty in markets, as well as what they are willing to do. So let us head over now to Bloomberg's very own Michael McKee.
Thank you very much. And we'd like to welcome Loretta Mester, the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Cleveland, to Bloomberg Television and Radio Worldwide. Good morning to you. And thank you for coming out on a chilly morning here in the mountains of Wyoming. You have said that if the economy, the data come in about as they have been, you don't necessarily see a need for another rate cut in September. But monetary policy works with long and variable lags, as we know.
Indeed.
And now it appears with these additional tariffs from China coming on this morning that trade wars aren't going to be going away anytime soon. So when you look at the economy 6-8 months from now, are you still confident that you don't need accommodation?
Well, that's the key question, right? Is we know trade policy uncertainty has been weighing on the outlook. You know, we talked to our business contacts. We've seen already business spending be weakened because of that tariff situation and the uncertainty around the tariff situation. And as this continues, we have to keep monitoring whether firms are going to continue to react the way they have and with caution, whether it'll begin to spill over in their hiring plans as well as their spending plans, and whether that'll then spill over to the consumer sector. And so I'm very focused on those risks to the outlook. So again, you do have to be forward looking, and that's a key risk, a downside risk to the outlook going forward. And I'm very attuned to that. And, you know, when I talk to my contacts, that's one of the key things that I'm asking. Are you changing investment plans? Are you continuing on your hiring plans? Wages are moving up, which is a good thing. Consumers have been very robust in terms of their spending over this period of uncertainty. And that's the kind of thing that we need to keep watching. But again, I want to take the time that we have until the next FOMC meeting and beyond to continue to assess things. And if it does turn out that those risks are manifesting themselves in a wider across a wider part of the economy and things are stepping down, then right, that's an argument for why we might need to recalibrate our policy downward, because you, by doing nothing in that scenario, you in a sense are tightening policy. And so that's the key question. Again, I think it's very important that we watch the data. If we were ever data dependent before, we have to be uber data dependent now and really be reacting to what's happening in the economy, not just as changes in sentiment, because uncertainty causes people to be sort of like, ooh, I'm a little bit concerned about what's going forward. But are they actually making decisions based on that uncertainty? And in that case, then we might have to move things.
Well, what are business
around.
Leaders telling you? Do they say things have gotten worse, that they might be seeing a step down because of the impact of what's going on?
So every business contact I talk to across the Wadstrath always mentioned trade policy uncertainty and the tariffs as being something that there is a concern of theirs. Majority of the firms that I talk to still say they're on their plan for investment for the year. They're certainly still seeing tight labor markets. They're still trying to hire and they're increasing wages to retain and to attract workers. The larger firms that have more multinational connections are affected by both the slowdown in global growth and the trade policy uncertainty, and they're reassessing their plan. So again, it's sort of a mixed picture, but I would say that our firms, at least in the 4th District, and we have, you know, exposure to manufacturing and to trade, have been more robust and been able to actually respond pretty well to this uncertainty. They're very concerned about it, and you know, we have the next potential leg here of the expansion of the tariffs to the consumer side. I think that could be a catalyst for changes in plans. But we haven't seen it yet, and I'd like to wait until we actually get some more information on how firms are reacting to that before responding in advance to it.
Suppose you have to respond. Suppose you cut rates. This isn't a demand issue or a cost of credit issue, so how does monetary policy help?
Well, it would be a demand issue at that point. If firms stop spending, right, and then they stop hiring, you know, or weaken their hiring, and we see consumers pulling back because of the caution, that is a demand issue. And in that case, lowering interest rates as the equilibrium rate in the economy goes down is the appropriate thing to do. But again, we need to be looking at that hard data, looking at the information we gain from our business contacts. I think this information that we're gaining from Main Street when we're going out and talking to businesses and talking to consumers and talking to labor market participants is going to be very important to us as we evaluate how we go forward here.
When you look at what's happened on Global Wall Street, the pricing in of many rate cuts going forward, do you worry that too much burden is being placed on you and the Fed to save the economy?
So there's no doubt that bond investors, you know, have a more pessimistic view of the U.S. economy than perhaps some of the economists do and I do. And we have to take a signal from that. We can't just ignore what's happening there. But there's also other reasons that those bond yields are down. One is that the U.S. is a safe haven flow and that, relatively speaking, our economy is doing better than other places in the global economy. I think the Fed, my main focus always when I'm setting policy is where are we? Where is the economy relative to our dual mandate goals? They're the beacons that we try to strive for, and we set our policy in order to hit those goals. And that's how we can do monetary policy, I think, in the best way, systematically focusing on those goals, looking at the data, doing the best evaluation we can of where the economy is going, and making sure that our monetary policy is appropriate for hitting those goals and maintaining those goals. There's other policies that can be brought to bear in the economy. We know workforce development issues are something very relevant in the 4th District, of course, you know, making sure that people have the skill sets to actually take the jobs that are available and to train for the future jobs. So there's other policies that can be, you know, brought to bear to make sure that in the long run our economy is healthy and that everyone can participate in a healthy economy. But again, monetary policy, dual mandate goals, that's got to be our focus.
You were for a long time concerned that inflation would break out as the economy expanded. Have you given up on that idea?
So I think inflation actually is in a pretty good spot. We're clearly, you know, below our mandate, but, you know, we've been pretty stable on the price front. And new research actually coming out of the Cleveland Fed, which looked at acyclical parts of the inflation prices and the cyclical part, actually shows that as the labor markets have gotten tighter, those cyclical prices have been moving up. So I'm more confident that we're going to see this gradual increase of inflation back to our goal because it does seem to be behaving the way we do. We may have to wait a little longer because there is a large part of inflation that is real acyclical. It doesn't move with the labor market because of other factors that affect prices. So, again, I think patience is called for. I'm not that concerned that we've been below target for quite a while. I think there's ways to explain that in terms of how deep the recession was and going forward. And I think inflation is pretty much moving up back a long path.
Well, as one of the bigger inflation hawks on the Open Market Committee, what do you think of the idea of letting the economy run a little hot, an asymmetric higher inflation rate for a while? There are various strategies to do that, but it all comes down to letting inflation run above your target for
right.
a while.
So I don't characterize myself as a hawk. I'm trying to always balance our dual mandate goals in terms of price stability and full employment and trying to calibrate policy to hit those in a balanced way. So, again, I do think that it's important that we always focus on those goals and take a balanced approach when we approach those. I always want to strive, if I had to pick an animal, to be an owl.
A wise owl, I presume.
Hopefully.
The question here is always whether you're a hawk or a dove, so I'm the ornithologist here trying to figure these things out. Do you worry, though, that people are getting too used to the idea that there is no inflation in the economy? Obviously, the Fed keeps a very close eye on inflation expectations, mm-hmm. both consumers and markets. Have you lost control of inflation?
So I don't believe we have. I think in the long run, inflation is a monetary phenomenon. I do think that some of the dynamics in inflation have changed. And in fact, the Cleveland Fed has established a Center for Inflation Research precisely because there's a lot about the dynamics that we still need to know about. I'm confident that, you know, inflation will move back up to target, and I'm confident that the Federal Reserve is going to set our policy rate to try to hit those dual mandate goals and maintain them.
Do you leave the policy rate as low as it is or even lower for as far as the eye can see?
So, you know, there's a lot of research that's gone into where the actual interest rate in the economy, the equilibrium interest rate in the economy is. And there is real good reasons to think that it's lower now than it was in the past. Demographic reasons, demand for safe haven assets or safe assets. And so there's a reason to think that interest rates are going to be lower going forward than they were in the past. And so, yes, interest rates likely will be lower than in the past. And then the question is, well, how do you manage monetary policy around that? And that's part of what the framework study of the Fed is all about that we've been doing for the last year or so, really is, okay, if we're in a low interest rate environment, what's the best way for the Fed to actually set policy to hit our dual mandate goals?
And do you have an answer yet?
I think there's certain things you could do. I mean, I think, you know, when you think about the inflation rate and, you know, the conversation we've been having about, you know, how we hit the goal, where we go, you know, just thinking about it in terms of instead of a point estimate, like 2%, maybe think about it as a range, not necessarily making up for past deviations, but thinking about it in terms of a range. And that may actually be a better way to communicate where we are relative to our goal and going forward, given the precision with which, right, the measurements are and how we can hit that and maintain it over time.
One of the questions that's come up is whether or not we can talk ourselves into recession. You have a lot of tweets coming out of Washington. You have negative comments coming out of companies with earnings mm-hmm. season. And of course, you have Wall Street. Mm-hmm. Absent that, would we be in trouble? Mm-hmm. I mean, we're at a very lengthy recovery now.
Right. So it's an interesting thing that you bring that up, because I've had a number of business contacts use that exact same thing. I think we're talking ourselves into a recession. And they're basing that on the fact that they look at their order book and they look at their loan demand and they look at, you know, depending on what sector they're in, and they say, look, I look at things and I think, you know, we're about on trend. I think the growth is on trend. And yet they turn on the television and they read what's happening in the financial markets and they say, wow, you know, people are really cautious. So there is this difference between perceptions and sentiment and the reality on the ground so far. But I do think that, you know, if firms do take into account, oh, things are more, you know, uncertain than I've seen in the past, that can have a real impact on investment spending, hiring, et cetera, going forward. And that's a key risk that we need to be attuned to going forward.
Loretta Mester, thank you very much from the Cleveland Federal Reserve. Thank you for joining us this
morning.
Thank
you very much.
That was Bloomberg's Michael McKee sitting down with Cleveland Fed President Loretta Mester.
We are now going to hear from Philadelphia Fed President Patrick Harker. He's in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, for Kansas City Fed's annual symposium. Sitting down with Bloomberg's own Michael McKee, talking about some of these issues, the Fed's reaction function in light of trade tensions. Let's head to Mike McKee.
Thank you very much. And again, welcome to all of our viewers and listeners on Bloomberg Television and Radio Worldwide. And thank you to Patrick Harker for joining us this morning.
Well, thank you.
A chilly morning here. Yep. We're only a few minutes away from Jay Powell's speech, and we can't preempt him. Right. But yesterday you said you'd be happy to leave rates where they are if the economy stays about where it is.
Right.
But this morning we had further evidence from China that we may see the trade war extend for quite some time. Policy works with long and variable lags, as they always say.
Right.
So when you look out 8 months to a year, can you say you would want to stay on hold? Or do you need to act now to get ahead of something?
No, I think right now we are where we need to be. That said, there are clearly these downside risks to the economy. And I think we would have to act as appropriate if those come to fruition, or even look like they're coming to fruition. The biggest concern I have right now is when you talk to business leaders, nobody I talk to says that the cost of capital is inhibiting business investment. And that has been the drag on the economy right now, is business investment, not the consumer. The consumer has been the hero of the American economy. So if that's true, right, that business investment is not being held back by the cost of capital, us reducing interest rates will have no effect. What's holding it back is the uncertainty around policy, particularly trade policy.
So is there anything for the Fed to do at this moment? Are you feeling pressure to be the savior of the economy because you're the only game in town?
So I think we have to act as appropriate when we see the economy having a shock. I don't see that right now, so I don't think we need to act right now.
Do you anticipate, from what your business contacts are telling you, that the economy is going to deteriorate, or are they kind of on hold too?
A lot of them are on hold. I mean, it's perfectly reasonable if you're sitting in a board right now, a corporate board, not to make a big bet until some of this uncertainty resolves itself. It's an absolutely reasonable thing to do.
What are they telling you about their economic outlook? In the absence of trade wars, would they be expanding?
Yeah, what we hear is especially around manufacturing, right? If we had more certainty around manufacturing, particularly globally, I mean, there are clear global risks, but those export-led economies like Germany are facing large challenges right now because of this uncertainty. Yeah, if that resolved itself, I think people would be making those investments.
There's enough demand in the economy.
Yeah. Look at the consumer. The American consumer continues to buy.
Would the consumer be the last person, though, to feel the change? I mean, if you're waiting for retail sales to fall off, are you going to then get a signal that's too late?
No, but why is the consumer buying? Because the job market continues to be strong, right? The labor markets continue to be strong. And so household incomes continue to be strong.
Well, you've got a reaction function that has been based on the idea for decades of controlling inflation and keeping inflation down. Inflation's gone away, as far as most people are concerned now, and unemployment keeps going lower and lower. Do you need to change the way you look at the economy?
No, I think, look, inflation clearly is a conundrum. That is, we don't really understand why it's been low for so long. But it's not necessarily the case, and we see this around the world, that if you have a more accommodative monetary policy, you're going to suddenly move inflation. That's not happened in other countries.
And so there are some underlying trends with the economy that are different today than before that we continue to try to understand. In that situation, where there's uncertainty, I don't think we should move precipitously in either direction. I think we should stay the course and see how things unfold.
Would you worry that Wall Street, or global Wall Street, as it were, might overreact to Fed rate cuts and misallocate capital?
Yes. I mean, one of the concerns is financial stability. That is, with rates going even lower, leverage rising. And that is a concern for the economy.
Do you see it anywhere yet?
A little bit in leverage lending, but it's something we need to keep. It's only something I'm watching. I wouldn't say it's a situation that warrants any action at this point.
One of the things that came out of the minutes this week was the idea that the Fed should be acting, at least some people on the committee think so, to try to bring inflation up.
Yeah.
Interest rates, though, were at zero for 7 years, didn't work.
Right.
So how much validity does that argument have anymore?
So, again, I think there are some underlying trends with inflation. But if you look at the latest CPI print, it's moving in the right direction. We are moving around 2%. And we're close enough, in my mind, where I don't think we need to take action at this point.
Well, as the Fed continues its review, one of the issues that's come up is, do you let the economy run hot,
sure,
let inflation run above target for a while to make up? How do you feel about that?
So, yeah, average inflation targeting of some form. So that's an appealing idea in theory. In practice, it's a little difficult because you are asking a future committee to act in a way that the current committee wants it to act. And that's very difficult.
But if you let that happen, do you worry that inflation could get out of control again? Or are you fairly sanguine about the prospects for prices?
So at this point, I don't see inflation running out of control in most scenarios. Of course, there are a few. But generally, no, I don't see that as a risk right now.
Well, then what is the Fed's reaction function going to be? What are you going to look at?
Yeah, so I can't speak for the Fed. I can only speak for myself. And again, I look at a strong labor market and rising wages. Again, slowly, but rising wages. Look at inflation. And one of the things we continue to factor in is the financial stability question.
Well, you look at the labor market and you see slowing hiring, still above the replacement rate. But is that because companies can't find workers or because they're getting more cautious?
I think a mix of the two. But what I hear more than they're getting cautious is they just can't find the people. And not just people, the skilled positions. We often focus on those. But I was talking to a major home builder who said, I can't find people to carry bricks and sticks on the site. Right. And so I'm limited in terms of how many homes I can build.
So is this about as good as it gets then?
I don't know. I mean, it's been surprising in a good way that we're bringing more people off the sidelines into the American economy. That's a good thing for the person and for the American economy. And I think there may be a little bit more to run, but probably not a lot more to run.
So have you changed your economic outlook based on the trade wars, based on what's happening?
Not yet. I mean, we have predicted going back to trend growth, 2% growth, with the employment numbers coming down to about 100, 110,000 a month. Now, we haven't changed that because the volatility in the policy itself, it's hard to predict and hard to put into any model.
Well, if you haven't changed your views, where do you think the proper setting for monetary policy is? Several participants in the Open Market Committee deliberations have told me, you look at the Fed funds rate above the yield curve, and that just tells you you're too tight now.
I think we're about where we need to be in terms of, I think we're about neutral right now.
Do you think that it is a problem that we're going to see a slowing in financial conditions if a tightening of financial conditions if the current settings stay?
It's a risk, and it's a risk I'm monitoring, but right now I'm not forecasting that, no.
So you don't see the markets as disrupting at this point?
Well, there's a lot of volatility in the market for sure, but, and the people watching know that.
But disrupting the path of the economy.
No, not at this point. I think the larger risk is this policy uncertainty, particularly trade uncertainty.
And there's nothing you can do about that.
And there's nothing. We need to react as appropriate to that, but no, we can't. We don't drive that policy.
Do you worry if you're trying to react that you're going to be too late?
Well, if I knew what it was, then we could plan. But right now, again, the volatility in the actual policy is too great for me to predict.
How hard is it for you to do your job on a daily basis, given the tweeted criticism of the Fed? And I don't mean in the room when you're making policy decisions, because every Fed person will tell you it doesn't affect us. But you go out and you talk to your constituents. Do you detect a change in attitude among people these days?
The main thing I hear when I'm out and about, and I was out and about in my district all summer meeting with people, is the concern that Fed independence is being threatened. I mean, everybody I talked to said that Fed, even though we're not perfect and we don't always make perfect decisions, that independence of the Federal Reserve is absolutely critical for the American economy.
You're not hearing people come up to you and say, you guys are the bad guys.
I don't hear much of that, no. In fact, all summer I didn't hear any of that.
How much of a threat do you think there is to the Fed independence? Is this more of a media creation than anything else?
No, I think we are a creature of Congress, and we are responsible to Congress. And so Congress could change the laws. I don't think that's in the foreseeable future, but we have to recognize that Congress has the absolute right to do that. But we need every day to earn the trust of the American people by acting on their behalf.
The last question is the same question I put to all of your colleagues, and that is, do you worry we can talk ourselves into recession?
Yeah, I mean, I think the lack of animal spirits, you know, if that diminishes, that's real. I don't sense that that is widespread right now. I think there are some concerns, particularly in manufacturing, although our last Manufacturing Business Outlook survey out of Philadelphia was good. So even across the board, manufacturing looks like it's weakening, there are pockets where it's still strong.
So you're optimistic about where we go from here?
I think I'm cautiously optimistic is the way I would say it.
Well, what does cautiously optimistic mean? How much of a threat do you think there is?
Well, I think if, again, particularly if this policy uncertainty around trade gets worse, we would have to act as appropriate.
You keep using the same phrase that Jay Powell used at his news conferences and things like that.
Yeah.
You mean cutting rates at that point, even if you think it doesn't work?
Because if it starts to affect the consumer, right? So on the business side, I don't think that channel is not very strong. But if it starts to affect the consumer and consumer confidence, because the consumer is 70% of the economy, that would have a real impact. So if we could do something in a way that would restore confidence to the consumer and put a little bit more money in their pocket through refinancing or whatever, that would be a good thing.
You think they would respond then to lower interest rates?
People respond to refinancing their mortgages for sure.
Is there much of that left?
It depends on where the rates are, right?
All right. Pat Harker, thank you very much for the Philadelphia Fed. Thank you for joining us on Bloomberg Radio and Television this morning. We'll send it back to you in New York.
That's Bloomberg's Michael McKee speaking with Philadelphia Fed President Patrick Harker.
Thanks for listening to the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. Subscribe and listen to interviews on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, or whichever podcast platform you prefer. I'm on Twitter at Tom Keene. Before the podcast, you can always catch us worldwide on Bloomberg Radio.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.